Hi, this is Barney Oram, and you are listening to the Sound Architect podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Sound Architect podcast. I am your host, Sam Hughes, and as you just heard, today I am joined by sound designer Barney Oram. Thanks for joining me today, Barney. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, Sam. How are you?
I'm very well, and I'm very happy to finally have you on the show. I've been meaning to have you on for a very long time, so it's great to finally have you. So I've got you on the show to talk a bit about your recent sound library, Western Black Powder Guns, which sounds awesome, by the way.
Thank you.
But before that, I'd love to know, you know, for the benefit of our listeners, why don't you tell a bit about yourself and your journey into game audio?
Yeah, it's probably fairly similar to a lot of people. I kind of got into making music and electronic music when I was a teenager. And I went to study kind of audio engineering when I was at university. And at university, I discovered sound design as a concept and somehow got onto the idea that I could marry sound design with video games. And that just made the world of sense to me, really. And yeah, I kind of just pursued that and managed to get a job back in 2016 with a company called Cloud Imperium Games, who hired me as a junior. And about a year and a half ago, I started working for a company called Sweet Justice Sound, who I now work for full time.
Fantastic. So where did you first get the idea to do this library?
Yeah, well, a lot of libraries really kind of come about from, in my opinion, from like seeing what isn't really available much on the market and trying to fill that need. And also it's a question of like, what do I have access to or what could I possibly get access to if I looked for it? And so, yeah, I just thought a library that was very much kind of dedicated towards this kind of Western sensibility in terms of guns would be quite a fun one to make. And also having had a look around, I managed to find a place just a few hours from me that had a selection of really nice kind of 19th century style black powder kind of flintlock guns, which was awesome.
Nice. Yeah, that's super cool. And what place was this? What were they called?
It was a place called Yeavely Shooting Estate, and it's kind of near, well, it's Derbyshire area. And yeah, it was this really quite lovely little shooting range attached to a like a stately home. And it was run by an old chap who was very, very friendly. And I don't think he quite understood what we were doing, but they were willing. So
that's the amazing part of our job, isn't it? A lot of time people just give you that weird look of, all right, yeah. I guess.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Turn up with all your gear.
Yes. Yeah. So I went down and they prepped all of these guns and we set them up in this kind of lovely range. It was quite a wet and muddy day, I have to say, but the recording sounded good.
Yeah, and they do. So in terms of that then, how did you know what equipment to take? How did you prep for the shoot? There must have been a lot of planning before you went down there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I hadn't recorded a ton of actual guns before, but I had recorded a few louder things. So it was mostly a question of figuring out the kind of microphones that I wanted to use that would capture things in an interesting way and a way that, you know, didn't use the characteristic of the microphone to its the best of its ability, and also just variation. And also the other thing that I really wanted to focus on was capturing stereo takes, because a lot of libraries, or not so much these days, but traditionally quite a few libraries, particularly gun libraries, tend to focus on mono takes, and they are useful for sure, but I always find myself reaching to stereo takes when I'm actually making gun sounds myself. So I decided to focus on that in the recording. You can make a stereo sound mono, but you can't really make a mono sound stereo, or not very easily at least. So the beauty of mono recordings is they have they usually capture the transient a lot better, and they usually capture the low end of the sound better as well, because in my opinion, bass sounds better in mono or in a narrow kind of stereo field. So in that sense, it's better. But I think for stereo, for me, just having that flexibility to make stuff sound wide and sound big was the kind of idea behind that approach.
Yeah, so you had your equipment ready, basically. So you had your mics. What about the recorders and your list of what you were going to shoot and how? Did you go there beforehand and be like, right, okay, this is where we're going to record? And, you know, or did you just go there blind with everything and then assess the situation on site?
Yeah, I did prep the mics. So I had the mic list, and I have a few different recorders that I used, a Mix Pre 6 by Sound Devices and a Zoom F6 as well. And yeah, in terms of like actually what we were going to do on the day, I kind of was going in a little bit blind because they their emails were quite brief. So I just thought, yeah, I'll turn up and see what they're willing to do. And amazingly, they were willing to fire quite a lot of guns, which was awesome.
Yeah, fantastic. And obviously the temptation is there to, when you have that amount of mics and everything, to record everything from every angle all at once. But that's not necessarily the best way to go about it, is it? How did you decide where your mic placement was going to be, what mics you were going to use on each one? Because there's already going to be a million recordings you have to go through at the end of the day anyway. So how did you decide to kind of be a bit more precise?
Yeah, absolutely. So what I tended to do, or generally I will do, is group a kind of close perspective, a medium perspective, and a far perspective as best I can. And usually like choosing the mics based on their characteristics to fit those needs. So obviously things that are closer will need a kind of something that's going to handle a louder SPL better. The distance is really is just a kind of question of giving people the variety when they're actually using the library. Instead of everything being recorded, you know, 10 feet away, there's a variety of like, okay, if I wanted to have a slightly different transient response, it's going to sound different at distance. So it gives the sound editors and the sound designers using the library that option.
Yeah, and obviously with firearms, it's there's a lot to consider in terms of safety, not just for yourself, but obviously our beloved equipment.
Yes.
How close can you get before you're like, yeah, I don't really want to put the microphone any closer now, to be honest?
Well, I mean, the closest microphone that you can put on something really, or that I have at least, is these ones called the DPA 4062s, which are these little lavalier microphones that have a really, really, really high SPL response. So you can literally clip it onto the gun or onto the shooter. Yeah, and it it usually sounds pretty good. It doesn't actually do that much damage.
Always good.
But yes, but there's some microphones. In fact, in this library, I kind of misjudged one of them. The Shep's Mini C-Mit, which is actually unfortunately quite an expensive mic to have misjudged.
I was going to say, out of all of the ones to misjudge.
I put that, I think, either 5 meters or 10 meters away, which is quite considerably close, and it. What happened is, it when you fire a gun or any loud sound, really, you get a little bit of a shock wave, physical shock wave along with the actual sound. And what that does is it kind of buffets the diaphragm of the microphone. And so you get a little bit of clipping, a bit of distortion that you can't really remove, even in a kind of 32-bit world where everything doesn't clip anymore.
You found
you
a way.
Still get that. Yes. Yes.
Amazing. And obviously the recording side, I mean, I guess it depends on your preference, but the recording side can actually be considered the quote-unquote easy part. Right, you've got everything afterwards that you have to do in terms of making a sound library. Now, I've personally not made a sound library myself, and I've used many, but there's a lot more involved than I think even I consider in the post-processing, because people think, oh yeah, you just go around, you know, you chop up your recordings, bish bash bosh, done. But it's not necessarily the case, is it?
No, not at all, actually. I completely misjudged that as well. I thought, oh, you know, the recording's the hard part, and then I'll just chop them, chuck them in Reaper, and then off you go. But actually, the the process of editing it and cleaning the sounds in RX and packaging them and doing the metadata and all that stuff takes ages.
I can imagine.
A really long time.
It becomes admin at one point, surely.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, spreadsheets.
Now, in terms of the RX cleanup, again, there must be, I mean, I'm only talking about hypothetically if I was doing this, that there must be that sense of, I don't want to overprocess it afterwards, because obviously I want to give people the rawest recording I can to let them do what they want to do with it. But at the same time, you want to give people a high quality source to use. So how do you toe the line of, okay, I want to clean this up, but I don't want to make it sound too processed. And how do I get this to a nice clean version?
Yeah, absolutely. For me, it's just a question of like, I want it to sound as useful as possible straight away. For me, like when I find sounds in libraries and it sounds like they'll need a lot of work to get the sound into a kind of useful state, a lot of, you know, I have to go in and manually denoise stuff, declick stuff, take out people talking and stuff like that. That straight away turns me off when I'm, you know, working as a sound designer myself. So I try not to go too hard so that you get any artifacts or anything like that from the denoising, but
Of course.
But yeah, just making it instantly useful is the idea, really.
Yeah, and then obviously you've provided some actually designed sounds as part of the library as well. Same sort of question here, but how do you decide what to do with the source material to then go, okay, now here's a selection of processed versions to give you an idea of, is it an idea of what you can do with it, or also provide source that people can use straight off the bat again?
Yeah. Well, it's funny, actually, the design section is kind of what prompted me to finish the library. I watched Django Unchained one day. The kind of
great inspiration for this library, I'm sure.
The kind of strange Western spoof film by Tarantino, which is a great film, by the way.
It is fantastic. Yeah.
And I just loved the gun sounds in that. I thought they sounded awesome. And while I was watching it, I was thinking, oh, I recorded a bunch of black powder guns a while ago, didn't I? I thought I was just sitting unedited.
Oh, yeah, I did that. Yeah.
So I grabbed them and I had actually already cleaned them as a colleague of mine and had asked for them to use for a project. And so they were kind of ready to go. And I just spent a few days just making some kind of Django-inspired Western gun sounds, just processing them and pushing them to the kind of furthest they'd go to sound cool. And then I finished the design section and I thought, I could just make a whole little library out of this. So I did. And there we go.
So it actually almost worked backwards from the design side. And you're like, oh, actually, these are usable.
Yes.
These are pretty good. Yeah. I should probably give them to other people as well.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
Nice. And one of my favorite parts of the library, I have to admit, is how you've managed to capture the mechanism sounds of the weapons as well. Is that from the DPA mic on the shooter that mainly caught that?
That was actually from. We recorded the mech stuff separately before we did the kind of main shoot, just in a shooting lodge that they had nearby. And to be honest, not that much of the stuff we recorded was super useful, but there were one or two takes that I thought really kind of captured that, you know, that sound that is nice. And I used it a fair bit in the design section and I thought, well, okay, I'll include it as well, because if I find it useful, other people might find it useful as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Now, one of the things I'm most curious about is what you've learned, because this isn't your first library. This is your third, I believe.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So you've made three sound libraries now. This was probably the most ambitious out of the three. How have you grown as a recordist and designer and learn along the way making these libraries? And also, what cautionary tales would you tell to anyone who wants to go out and record a library, even like specifically guns?
I think one of the big mistakes that I made on the Lo-Fi Sci-Fi library, which is my second one, was I kind of got a little bit too ingrained in this lo-fi aesthetic approach, and all of the sounds in that library are mono. when they really shouldn't be. But I was kind of...
Which we know now is your least favourite.
Yes, well, probably because of that, yeah. Yeah, but I was really obsessed with stuff like Alien, and I was like, okay, I'm going to try and make this sound as old as I possibly can. And so that decision was one I made early on, making that library, and then halfway through realised, oh, make everything mono is a bit boring, really. So I kind of regret that as well. But yeah, I mean, the biggest thing that I've learned is I always try to record at the highest sample rate I can now, even if I don't include it at the highest sample rate. At least I have that as an option. You know, you can't go back and recapture something like Guns when you've recorded something at the wrong sample rate.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, the other thing I always try to put focus on is a nice design section, because I think that having that almost just as an inspiration sometimes is really cool. In a library, you can kind of say, well, this is what they've made with the sounds, that the source sounds that are included. What could I make with it? And also, I think that, you know, it's very easy to use design sounds in your work as well. You know, hopefully that's something that is... a time saver for people and things like that. So yeah
definitely. And do you have any other plans for more libraries now that you've done this one, or has it kind of broken you where you're like, okay, yeah, that was enough, I've dipped into sound libraries now, I've had my fun?
Yeah, actually, over the last year or so, I have been recording quite a large explosives library.
Oh wow.
Yes, and that, again, as you said, that has taken me considerably longer to edit than I had anticipated. I thought it took me about a year to record the library, and I thought it'd be a few months of editing, but no, it's taken ages. It's taken a really long time.
And is that due to the sheer amount of content, or is that down to the selection process? Because I can imagine, especially same with the Guns, but with explosions, you're looking for those unique personalities, right? You're looking for the ones that set them apart and isn't just the same as the same explosion before it. And how do you, I mean, I suppose you just listen to everything over and over and be like, okay, A, B, this, A, B, that, is this better than that one? And do you just kind of condense and eliminate as you go through?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the recording sessions I actually did for the Explosion Library was at this kind of military show in the UK, where they had like actual live firing tanks, believe it or not. And these tanks are firing,
oh, wow.
Yeah, firing rounds into this, I can't remember where it was. I think it was near Rugby, into this field. And I was out there recording it. And annoyingly, they had kind of a bit of a crowd and like a presenter who was talking over stuff.
Other people. It's the worst.
It's so annoying.
You just want to be there on your own with your recorder.
Yeah. So amazing opportunity to record these big tanks firing. But, you know, one out of three takes has a child screaming or some bloke saying,
yeah,
ladies and gentlemen, big hand and all this kind of thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, and you can't really go like, excuse me, are you free next weekend? Could you just bring the tanks back?
Yes.
Just for me?
Yeah.
Be great.
Yeah.
So what kind of explosives should we look forward to?
Well, the library is really varied, actually. I recorded a few different cannons for it, which is really fun. I recorded a mortar. And I recorded,
oh, wow.
Yeah. And one of the big sessions that I did for it was I managed to get in contact with this film kind of pyrotechnics explosives company who were based at this ex-military like storage facility. And they like brought out the big guns, and they had like TNT and C4 and things like this, crazy,
oh my god,
really highly explosive substances. Yeah. And we went out to the field at the back of this.
That's both scary and exciting.
Yeah, it was. Well, the funny thing about plastic explosives is they're not reactive in their natural state. You have to excite it.
No, of course, you need the detonator.
Yeah, with a detonator. So we went down to this, they had this kind of workshop where they had all these explosives laid out on a table. And and one of the armourers who was handling the explosives just threw a little block of Semtex at me. And of course, I...
Yeah, you panicked. I would too, even knowing this thing.
But yeah, it's just like plasticine. You can hold it in your hand and it's fine. But stick a bit of deck cord in it and it goes bang, which is awesome.
Yeah, it's insane how it works. And did you imagine that, you know, at some point in your life, you sat here going, so the funny thing about plastic explosives, right?
Yeah, well, I started last year with this idea. I recorded a few fireworks and I thought this would be an interesting challenge to try and make a library of explosion sounds. Probably mostly out of naivety, so I contacted everyone I could.
You did pick one of the hardest libraries to make straight away.
Absolutely, like, yes, so. Yeah. Contacted a bunch of people and tried to see what was possible to do. And actually, it turns out it is possible, despite what I thought. So yeah, I guess it was a bit ambitious, but it was fun. It was worth doing.
I can imagine. And obviously, as you say, there's a lot of editing to be done on the Explosion Library, but when could we maybe look forward to that?
I'm really hoping to get it done in the next month or so, hopefully. That's the plan. I usually what I do is I edit all the recordings and get them cleaned and stuff and then make the design sounds. And so that process hopefully shouldn't take too long, but I'd quite like to make quite a cool design section with those sounds.
So, yeah. And how do you decide how many? Would you say roughly there's like a percentage of the library that you're like, okay, I'll do like 10% of sound designed files or like 20% of designed files?
Yeah, I do try to stick to a kind of rough approach like that in terms of like a fraction of the overall sound count. But what I more try to do is just make sounds, as many sounds as I can that feels organic, you know. So at the point where I feel like I've done all I can in terms of design, because there's only so far really that you can push the material that you have before it starts to sound samey. So yeah, I generally find that it usually ends up being fairly obvious when I've, you know, run out of ideas.
Yeah, they start sounding too similar and you're like, okay, I think we're done now.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, one of my kind of towards the end questions, one of my final questions on this library would be, how do you decide how much to sell a library for? How do you put a price on what you've put into this library and also expect that this is going to be paid based on what you've done?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, actually, because there's a lot of factors really that decide how much you should sell a library for. I think for me, a big factor is, obviously, as you say, I've only made a few libraries. I'm still a bit of a rookie, really, in the sound world. So I think...
But should that matter, you know? Should it matter what experience you have if it's a good library?
Yeah, well, I mean, I kind of try to price stuff in a way that I think if people, you know, haven't heard of me before or aren't sure what I'm capable of, it's still at a level where they're happy to pay that kind of price, you know, just based on the content, even if you know that they have no prior knowledge of who I am or what I do. So there's certainly that, and also the actual size of the library and how much effort has gone into it and how much money went into the initial side of it as well.
Of course, yeah. And it's quite bespoke. It's quite niche.
Yes.
So I guess that must play a part in it as well. Like, not everyone can just go out and record guns, and especially Western black powder guns.
Yeah, totally. And as well, from a kind of sales perspective, I really try to get quite niche in terms of the library itself, in terms of like filling a specific need.
Yeah, exactly.
I think, like, you know, if someone's working on a Western film or game or whatever, hopefully they'll have a look around and see what libraries are available and say, oh, here's one that someone's made. And as I said, not many of those in that style around. So yeah, hopefully in that sense it'll be useful.
Yeah, I hope so. Okay, just to wrap up on this whole kind of library topic, what would you advise to anyone else wanting to go out and make their library? What else would you say to them?
Yeah, I think I really enjoy the process of making libraries. I think I get so much kind of reward from recording the sounds myself and then using those sounds and designs and then being able to share that with other people. I find that really fun. And I think that it can seem a bit bewildering. It certainly did to me at the start, the idea of putting a library together, and there's this kind of black magic of metadata that like seems to be an unspoken thing. But you know, there's tons of resources out there, and I would say the vast majority of people that make libraries would be willing to help you, you know, or explain to you how they've done a certain thing or put something together. So in my opinion, the beautiful thing about libraries is you don't have to make something that's, you know, fits into whatever project you're working on. Like I have never worked on a Western style project. And for me, the opportunity to make a library of that style was attractive because it's not something that I've explored before. So, And it also, there's a good community online of people making libraries, and people that are kind of, I think, pushing each other to make better stuff and to make things that are more unusual and more useful. And being part of that is really, really cool. So yeah, I would definitely say to anyone that's interested in making one, go for it. You know, try it out. Obviously, you'll make mistakes, but along the way, you'll probably record some cool sounds, and you know, that could be useful to somebody out there. So do it.
Yeah, and some of those mistakes could actually turn into great sound design, as we all know.
Absolutely, yeah.
Amazing. Well, I have to say it's been an absolute pleasure, Barney. Sadly, that is the end of my questions. But I would love to have you back on the show in the near future.
Absolutely, that'd be great. Thank you very much for having me.
It's been a pleasure. Take care.
Bye.
Hey everyone, this is Sam. Thanks very much for listening to the Sound Architect podcast today. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If so, there are many ways you can support the show, which is incredibly appreciated. Obviously, there's the financial way where you can support us on Patreon, which is patreon.com/sounddesignuk. However, there are many other ways which also help, such as liking, subscribing, reviewing, commenting, and sharing via whatever channel you listen on. Thanks so much for your support already. It really is a work of passion for me, and I'd love to keep sharing the knowledge from all these talented and wonderful people. Thanks again, and catch you on the next episode.
Hi, this is Michael Helms, host of the Location Sound Podcast. My recent guest is production sound mixer Byron Mayer, based out of Copenhagen, Denmark. We talk about recording sound on the feature film Torbos, the official Oscar entry for South Africa. Check out the latest episode.
Hi, this is Christian from the Sound Effect Podcast. In our latest episode, you'll hear field recordist adventurer George Vlad from Mindful Audio talk about his travels and work, including his latest library, African Desert, all at soundeffect.com/podcast.
I'm Emily, and I host Level with Emily, a podcast about audio and video games. Our newest episode features an interview with the three composers for League of Legends from Riot Games and the other games that come from League. You can find Level with Emily where you listen to your podcasts, and we're also on Patreon at patreon.com/level.